lot of the lessons that I felt like I have studied and have meant the most to me have been lessons regarding building and construction and development. And as I've told Kim and I've told many of you, that I tend to see so many things in my life as a metaphor. Somebody does something and I see an image that represents the situation that they're going through. And when I think about them again and the challenges that they might be dealing with or the obstacles that they may be facing, I still see that image again. And for me, I internalize that and I think about, okay, if I face that, how would I get past that? What things should I be looking for as it gets closer? And you guys might remember some of my lessons of the past, the sign lesson that I've done and the building lessons and the construction lessons, and all those things have been useful for me as a Christian and as a person that's trying to be more like God and Christ, but also as a brother to all of you and to those that we're trying to influence, seeing things in their lives that are obstacles for them and internalizing that, not just for myself and my own awareness, but also to figure out, how can I help them steer around these things that they face? How can I help them deal with these things? And what ways can I encourage them and those kind of things? So that's one of the things we'll be doing today. I don't put the information in the lesson right off the bat, but I want to encourage all of you. We're going to go through three things today. We're going to be looking at a couple of screen captures from some do-it-yourself type videos. But I want you, as we go along through here, I want you to pay attention to the steps that we go through. Because as with all my lessons, there's going to be a very physical thing, as I talked about just now, the metaphor in my mind of things that are happening in real life. And it's not much different than what Jesus would do with this idea of parables, how Jesus would talk about a parable and put these stories into these people's mind so that they could make that spiritual application, as we talked about so much on Wednesday. So as we go through these things, keep those things in mind. We do have a number of slides tonight, this morning. I'm not going to be spending much time on them, but I will have them available, and as I try to do with every lesson that we have prepared, I'll try to have these up on our site for us to look at. Sometimes I put definitions on here, and I know Kyle and Cody do the same thing when we have some of our lessons, as well as some of those that have spoken for us from visiting from other congregations. And they're typically words that we know very well and we really don't need a definition for, but sometimes as you get to be an adult, you look at definitions of things, you're like, yeah, that says something a little bit different than I was thinking. So when we get into the idea, and this whole lesson is going to be talking about unfinished, and you'll see at the very conclusion why I kind of got focused on this lesson and why it means so much to me. So unfinished there says, one of the definitions is that it's not finished. You can take the word un, and one of my favorite English classes I've talked to you about before was a word cell class that we had. And we would break all these words into little bits and pieces. So if you take the un off of finished, it's just done. It's finished. It's complete. But if it's got un on there, then it's not. So it's not finished. It's incomplete or unaccomplished. So I normally don't mess with the synonyms on here, but I think because I want all of you to pay attention to both the physical lesson and the spiritual application of this lesson, look at some of these things. Some of the synonyms are words that mean essentially the same thing as unfinished, all listed there for you. You could pick and choose as you wish. It could mean bare, it could mean incomplete, undeveloped, unfulfilled, amateurish, crude, cut short, defective, and we can go through all those things. But the reason why I kept it in the lesson today, again, for the spiritual part of that, is as we look at ourselves, and I talked about internalizing those metaphors that I see in people's lives, or things that they're going through, things that I'm going through, things that people say. Sometimes as a Christian trying to be Christ-like, I can look at all those synonyms and I think of myself being unfinished, not complete, not polished and well done. And how many of these things are actually applicable to me? I feel imperfect, one of the words there. I feel found wanting sometimes. There's times I feel fragmentary. I feel half-baked sometimes, incomplete, unassembled. You go through that list, and I think all of you, if you're looking at the screen, will be able to see things that maybe you can internalize as well and say, yeah, I'm still working towards perfection. And keep that in mind. The idea that I want to clarify on this whole lesson, the idea of unfinished, is getting to the point where it's done, and not just done lightly or done partially, but done completely. Thoroughly done. So all these things in between there are really words that kind of describe the steps of things prior to them being finished. So we're going to go looking. We're starting with a video. I've got some screen captures here. This is called Logs to Flooring Milling. I told Nick when he was here earlier, I said it's another Garrett-esque lesson because of the Garretts with their building history and construction history. Just seems to always kind of go along with the family. I've got the video there for if you'd like to follow these along after the lesson for additional study. But again, it's not so much about what's happening here. I want you to pay attention as we go through these things, thinking about the process, thinking about the state of the wood. We're going to be starting off talking about milling and flooring. Think about the wood and the changes that it goes through from start to finish. And I didn't go back. I wanted to go back to when the tree was standing here and they cut the tree down, but that would go right along with what Glennon typically says. Some of my lessons get a little bit long, so I was trying to help him out there. So, with the video here, we get in here. This is from the Woodworkers Guild of America. You can get their site, but as we go through here, I'm going to bring some of these slides up here and kind of give you a description of what's going on. So any of you that understand wood cutting and the wood process know prior to this point, they had to cut the tree down, they had to take the tree to a mill, they had to just cut off all the sides of it, take the bark off of it and get it smoothed out, and then get it down to this point where these are in planks here. So as we run through here, first of all, we've got pine boards that are running through a planer. A planer, if you've never understood that or heard people talk about it, didn't know what it is, it's a machine that has blades on top, blades on the bottom. You push a piece of wood in there and it cuts the top and bottom at the same time to make it consistent height. So you're putting boards in there that are rough hewn. Again, we're talking about being unfinished. It smooths them out, but then it puts them out of the machine, whatever the width they are, but at a consistent height. And you can see that one timber that's coming out of there, or the one board that's coming out of there, is kind of wavy. That's because it's still got the characteristics of the tree, even though it's been planed down to that vertical height. And then that gentleman's there waiting for it to come out. The next process in this video, and there's the machine that's actually doing that, that's the one that has 104 carbine cutters per head, and it's 24 inches wide. It has one head above and one head below. And if you know anything about carbine and wood and machining equipment, you know that that's able to really cut some things down there. So pretty complicated machine there. Next, we're taking the wood that just came out of the planer, and we're taking it to the rip machine. And this is called a gang rip machine. It has three saw blades, has two different widths, and it can do both of those widths at the same time. So they take that wood and they push it through the machine. It cuts it one width and cuts another width off to the side of it. And we can see that on as it comes out the other side there. The pieces that are coming off there are just the leftover timber. They really aren't using that for anything, but as it comes out with one side and the other side, those are the extra pieces that are no longer needed. Four and a half, this particular machine can do 4.5 inch and 5.5 inch at the same time, or it could be changed and they can move the blades so it can do 3.5 inches on one side and 6.5 inches on the other. Any of you that have ever shopped for real wood for your homes, for your flooring, typically know that you're looking either for one of these sizes. We could typically say a 4-inch board or a 5-inch board. The half is just for the parts that tuck underneath the others. So we continue going through looking at this process as the week for that. I didn't get a picture of it. Just to the left of that dumpster that you can see there, there's just bags and bags and bags, hundreds of pounds of sawdust. So as these things are milled and the wood's cut down, that tree that starts off as a tree and it kind of gets sliced in pieces and trimmed down loses more and more of it, what it started with originally in its natural state. So they've got all these bags of sawdust that are being sent out, and people buy that and use it for other things. But then they've also got this scrap of what they call rip bundles. And so these are all, when they're running that rip machine, these are the little pieces that aren't needed, but they're very long, and they can be used for other things or even just recycled. So these bundles are pulled out of here, and some of these bundles weigh hundreds of pounds as well. Continuing on with the next stage that we've got on here is the molder for the tongue and groove flooring. So they're taking all these pieces of wood, and they're running it through this machine, and they run it through here, and as with most saw equipment, they push the board in, and the board machine actually will just slowly pull that in and do things with it. So in this, it's actually taking these boards that have been cut. And again, I mentioned the 4.5 inch, 5.5 inch, 3.5 inch, and 6.5 inch boards. And what it's doing is it's trimming these things down, but it's also shaping them too. These cleated gears here, or they were actually what sits on top of the wood and actually pulls it through, so it's consistently fed in through the machine. What this does is it's also finalizing the thickness of the board. So even though the planer has made it a pretty consistent thickness, these need to be very, very exact. And so if there's any additional amount of wood that needs taken off that, they can do that as well. Staying on this picture, I took a couple of them off of here just to kind of not get too long there. But the other thing that this machine does is it also cuts relief cuts in the back of the board. If you've ever put natural lumber in your house, you know the back of the board typically has these little cutouts in the bottom of it, both to help the wood breathe and to actually give it some sturdiness when people are walking on top of it, but also helps to cut down on some of the material. You know, on the sides too, you can slip it under one and kind of jam it together. So that's where we get into the idea of the tongue and groove. Here, this gentleman is actually taking through what they call it defected. So he's taking the work boards that have just gone through the machine and they've been shaped. You can see that line running down the board there on the side towards the machine. And he's actually cutting out things of the bad spots in the board. There might be split ends where the boards first started being cut and they're all frayed. You don't want a board that's damaged like that when you're working on it. You also don't want knots in your board. All of us that have ever worked on wood understand what knots can be. You try to put a nail into a knot and not know that it's there because it's painted, it will probably just bust and cause all kinds of problems for you. So the idea here, some things that we talk about here, when we got into the rip machine, trying to keep the ideas of the spiritual things in mind as we look at some of these physical pictures. When we're doing the rip machine, it's just the idea of the difference between me and you and each person in our lives. There's something unique about every one of us. Same thing about the different boards that are cut, the different widths, 4.5 inch, 5.5 inch, 3.5, and 6.5. Some people are tall, some people are short, some people have the ability to teach, and all these things, everybody's different. The idea of the bags of sawdust and those rip bundles, remember that forklift was carrying those rip bundles out of there. They've got good wood in there, but those are all the pieces that weren't useful. And that's something that we kind of, it's one of the things we can internalize a little bit, is knowing that we have things in our lives that are very much a part of our person, a part of our function and our and how we do things, but they may not be things that are good for us. And they are going to sometimes be a problem as we try to fit in with the idea of trying to be a good person for God, a Christian, and so on. The same thing is true for the idea of the molding machine, about the tongue and groove, and how you can get a flooring, but if nothing ever connects properly, it's never going to work. And so those things are important too. Just as this gentleman here is cutting all the bad spots out of these bad floors, it's the idea of being tested. We've talked so much about that, and I love our discussions that we get into that. How do we know that we're going to fit well? Well, it's because when we're tested, we understand that those fittings. If that man is not taking those split ends out of here or those knots out of here, and somebody's testing to see how well those board pieces fit together, they may not last. They may not go together at all because it's not tested. The next picture we have on here, this idea of running boards through this end matcher. And what happens here is you take all the boards that have been cut. I mentioned to you, you can see how they're shaped. You can see in that pile over there, you can see the bottoms of some of those boards. You can see the rounded shapes there. You can also see the tongues and the grooves kind of sticking out of there. But that's what this machine's doing here. So they put this running boards on this end matcher, and the idea of their end matcher is making sure that these pieces of wood are shaped so that they will connect together. And as you see the pictures here, they may not be very easy to see, but on that picture there, you can see the groove end. So this takes this board on this conveyor belt, it stops. There's a machine that stops it at exactly a certain point. A machine comes across there and cuts that groove out of there, as well as making the groove and tongue on the sides of it as it's running through there. So that's the one thing. And the idea here that I wrote down for our spiritual thought on there is just diversity. Some people are going to be the groove side. Some people are going to be the tongue side. And it's when they work together that they are complete. Another picture there shows the tongue side of the board. You can stick it out, so where the one side was trimming into the board in the middle, this side's cutting the top and bottom out so that tongue sits there. And if you don't know wood very well, tongue and groove basically fit together like this. You have a board here and a board here, and right on the edge they snap together. So that's why you see people when they're working with wood, they have these hammers that both push the wood sideways and also nail it into the floor as they're going along. Finally, they got all the wood done. It's been shaped. They've put the grooves on the sides and front and back. They are joining, and this person's job here is to take every board that comes off of here and stack it. Even though these boards are all varying lengths, his job is to make sure it stacks as well as proper, or as well as possible. Because if you've ever gone to a place to buy flooring like that, you'll typically get a full stack of wood, and you want it to be good. But when you start unbundling it, you'll see, I've got a 2-foot piece, I've got a 5-foot piece, I've got a 6-foot piece, another 3-foot piece. His job is to make all those work together. And the idea there reminds me of just the way that the Christ body, the church, is assembled. Again, all these different pieces of different lengths and capabilities all meshed together and functional. And then finally, the video finishes up. It says, after 4 hours of end matching, remember that was the step where the two pieces are cut in the front and back, not including the rest of it, but there's a full bundle of flooring there, and that's showing 2,010 square feet of flooring board completed. So that's, I don't think any of us probably have a house that big. I've never have had one. I've had one that was about 2,500 square feet. I didn't have that much wood for sure. But when you get all done with it, you have a board that is actually able to be put into a situation where you can connect it with other boards. So that was the first part of our lesson, and even though I stole this picture from the second part of the lesson on refinishing floors, we started off with finishing floor, going from a start to a new state to an older state. So this next section is another video, this one by Home Depot, called How to Refinish Hardwood Floors. I need to do that, so that's one of the reasons I got interested in this. If we've ever had a hardwood floor, you've probably seen your floors looking like this. You don't like to see them that way, but you've probably seen it. And maybe you've been the person to create these little gouges and scratches and stuff. I've been at people's houses and like, oh, I'll help with that table. And you go over and grab their table and slide it across the floor and you hear, and you look down, and now there's a fresh scratch that said, Roger, just help me move this table. We don't like to be in those situations, but that's what happens. And you can see on the screen behind me, all those different scratches could have come from anything. Somebody carrying a heavy metal thing into the house. Somebody pulling a kid's toy into the house. Somebody moving a table. Whatever the case may be, it's all damaged onto this floor. So how do you get it back to a state that's more attractive? This video here shows you how. And what we start off with is nailing down the boards. The idea that if you've ever walked through a house that has natural wood flooring on there, you know sometimes it's just beautiful to walk on, it sounds good, but then you go maybe to Grandma and Grandpa's house or something, and you walk through and you hear, or you step on something and you can feel something move. The idea for this person here, his job is to make sure that this floor is as solid as it can be when it's done. So first of all, he starts off nailing down any of these loose boards. Next, there's almost always gouges in the wood that have been damaged, as we saw in that first picture. So he's using a latex wood putty to fill any of the holes that are in here, putting down with a putty knife, and then he'll eventually sand that. The two things that I've got here for spiritual considerations is any of those loose boards, the idea of scriptures that talk about securing ourselves in Christ, securing our position as Christians. The same thing with the latex wood putty is that idea of protection. Be on guard, protect yourself, and those kind of things. The next step when you're refinishing a floor, so you've nailed it down, you've got the gouges fixed, is to use a drum sander with a floor. And this is the idea, I think, of talking about the removing of the filth of the flesh. We see passages talking about that. There's two different ways you can do floors. You can start off with a very heavy grit sandpaper and then move to a lighter grit sandpaper. On the side there, as you can see on the pro tips from the Home Depot video, says start with a 36 or 40 grit sandpaper and move to a 60 grit, finish with an 80 or 100 grit. If that doesn't mean anything to you, the lower the number is, the rougher it's going to be, and the higher the number, the smoother it's going to be, and less damaging it will be. So this is a belt sander, and a belt sander basically moves in a consistent spinning cycle on a horizontal plane. And if anybody has never used one of those, I can tell you, even this video points out, you want to probably practice before you use one of these, because if you don't move fast enough, it will just go straight down. And Pam and her family could probably tell you, if you aren't real careful or you've seen people not know how to use these things, they will just eat up a floor. So you might have a nice floor all ready to go, but you're going to have a square where you weren't moving fast enough because it'll just tear it up. And this is what the sander looks like underneath there. Again, is like a belt that's working. You can see the close bottom right corner of the screen capture I have there shows the older floor being stripped away, and then everything above that is having the finished sanded off, having any of the imperfections sanded off, having even the places that were spackled in sanded off to try to get a very even, consistent, level floor on there. The next thing that they show you, and I skipped all the parts about putting up plastic for dust and taking down the sideboards and stuff on there, but we're talking about the condition of these floors. So even though we're sanding this stuff off and we want to take off all that material, they make a really good point in this video to say, don't forget to sweep and vacuum up all that dust you're creating. Because as you know, with anything that's wood, if you get a splinter off of it, that splinter can actually become a projectile and cause lumping or cause gouges or whatever else is. You want to be careful with that. Okay, we've got the floor done with our belt sander. Now we switch over to a sander that is a fine grit sandpaper. And this one is more of a vibrating type sander. So instead of one where it's constantly moving, this one is basically just moving around and it's a softer weight. So you've gotten it knocked off the surface, you've taken it down, and now you're actually polishing it. And you do that without as you go around the room. Got a bag there on the side collecting dust. When you get back in the corners, neither of those sanders that guy's using, the belt sander or the vibrating sander, work very well. So you actually change to a different type of sander so that you can use that as well. And this is an edge sander to finish the edges of the room too. So you definitely don't want to have the edges that all look badly. And then after you get the edge sander, you switch over to finishing with an orbiter sander. So one of them spins around in a complete circle. It also uses up a lot of material. The orbital just basically vibrates and kind of spins around in a circle. So it doesn't take up as much. But again, it's very important. And then once again, the video shows you going through and cleaning up things with a vacuum and dust to remove those things. As we get back to some of the thoughts as we move through here, the other spiritual applications I was thinking, this idea of the scratch marks being avoided by using sweeping and vacuuming is the idea for a Christian to watch and protect themselves. We talked about that in class today, very, very applicable. Another thing we talked about, the drum sander and trying not to stick with that, moving down to a more the vibrating sander with a higher grit sandpaper. Luke chapter 3 verses 5 through 6 is a reference back to Isaiah, and it talks about making the crooked ways straight and the rough ways smooth. Again, just an idea for us to think about as a spiritual application. So we've got all of our floor sanded down. We've got it sanded down a little smoother with our vibrating pad and with our higher grit sandpaper. We've vacuumed, we've swept. Now you're cleaning the area with a tacky cloth or a tack cloth to pick up the dust and debris. So even though the vacuum can suck all the big stuff off there, anybody that's ever cleaned knows that if you've got little gaps in wood like that, you're still probably going to pull additional stuff out, and that's where you need to use your hands. So the idea there is that I wrote down off to the side there for a spiritual application, putting aside those things that kind of messes up, those things that trip us and cause problems for us. Finally, we get to a point of applying stain. So in this case, they're going with a dark wood, even though they kind of started off with a lighter wood. You push that on with a foam applicator. You remove the, it's hard to see up there, but you can remove the excess stain as you go with a cotton cloth. So you put it down with the rubber or the foam applicator. You wipe it off with a cotton cloth. And then, interestingly enough, as we're kind of talking about spiritual things, I like this. The video says, finally, apply a finish with lamb's wool applicator after the stain is dry. Let the finish dry and apply a light sanding with 220 grit sandpaper with each coat of finish. So what they've done here is they've put all that stain down, they've wiped off the excess, they've taken that lamb's wool cotton or that lamb's wool applicator, and they've put finish on there, and they've wiped that onto the floor. Then they've let it dry. Then they've gone through and sanded it very softly to smooth out those imperfections that may not be visible. They've put that finish down again, sanded it, and put it down for the third time. So they, multiple times have they been extra careful to make sure that that finish was good. Perfect example when we're talking about lamb's wool as a Christian, getting these things that are problems for us and letting Christ into our lives, I thought was interesting. And finally, the hardwood floors are a gorgeous part, as they say, of any home. With the right care, you can refinish your floors to their original condition. So we've talked about two different things, but the end product looks just as beautiful. Starting from scratch, ending up with this floor, or refinishing it and getting back to this point. So how do we break this into some spiritual applications? Here we go. Wait for this to come up. So we went through our list there of what unfinished was. We talked about the synonyms of unfinished and how some of those really touch on the personalities that we have trying to do what's right. And then we get into trying to do, we try to see how Scripture talks about things being finished. In Genesis chapter 1, 31 through chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and morning were the sixth day." That was the end of the creation. And he says, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished." So we're talking about unfinished, looking at ourselves, but talking about finished with God, it can be completed. One interesting thing that I thought about there, and I've looked at this passage many times, and we can get into a lot of conversation about that, but notice when you back up a little bit, but Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, it says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters." I think sometimes we forget about this verse because the earth had been in existence for some time. I don't want to get into a discussion about how long that had been, but there's a lot to this verse that I don't think we often look at. But the earth was clearly unfinished at this point. Everything that he does past this point was completing the earth, making the waters, making the land, making it a place that was inhabitable and a place that actually had life on it. So just think about that. Another finishing of God. In Exodus chapter 39, starting with verse 32 and doing verse 43, "Thus all the work of the tabernacle," remember the tabernacle was the first place of worship that the Jews had as they were wandering in the wilderness before the temple was done. It says, "All the work of the tabernacle and the tent of meeting was finished. And the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord had commanded Moses, so they did." There is a very, very lengthy, specific list of things that had to be done for the temple and for the tabernacle. And I encourage you to go back and look at some of these things to see what all they had to do. And then continuing in verse 43, "Then Moses looked over all the work, and indeed they had done it, as the Lord had commanded, just so they had done it. And Moses blessed them." So part of finishing something is completing it, being done with it. And so think about that. So we've talked about the earth being finished. We've talked about the tabernacle being finished. Now we're talking about the temple of Solomon, 1 Kings 6, 14 and 15. "So Solomon built the temple and finished it. And he built the inside walls of the temple with cedar boards. From the floor of the temple to the ceiling, he paneled the inside with wood. And he covered the floor of the temple with planks of cypress." Continuing on. "Then he built the 20-cubit room at the rear of the temple from floor to ceiling with cedar boards. He built it inside as the inner sanctuary and the most holy place. And in front of the temple sanctuary was 40 cubits long. The inside of the temple was cedar, carved with ornamental buds and open flowers. All was cedar. There was no stone to be seen." I think sometimes we forget about the temple being almost all stone and forget about what the inside of it was like. I could probably ask some of you that are fortunate enough to have a cedar chest, do you ever like opening a cedar chest up? Don't they smell good? What is the other advantage of a cedar chest? Isn't it able to keep moisture and mildew and all those things out of there? It will. And just think about how much you like to smell cedar, fresh cedar in a cedar chest, and imagine the temple having that smell wafting out of it as you worked around it or you worshiped God there. Just something else interesting to see. So making spiritual applications to our building. 2 Peter 1, 5-8, I've used this verse a few times in recent lessons, but again, it's very applicable when we're talking about being unfinished. "But for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, virtue knowledge, knowledge self-control, self-control perseverance, perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. For if these things are yours and abound," notice it says abound, "you will be neither barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ." 2 Peter 1, 9-11, "For he who lacks these things is short-sighted, even to blindness. He has forgotten that he was cleansed from his old sins." Keep that in mind when we're talking about that transition from a perfect floor to a floor that's been damaged through years of use to having to be unfinished again and refinished, just to seeing how God works in our lives. "Therefore, brethren, be even more diligent to make your call and election sure. For if you do these things, you will never stumble, for so an entrance will be supplied to you abundantly." Not just an entrance, but it says an entrance will be supplied to you abundantly. Think about just some of the conversations Jesus had with his disciples. Into the everlasting kingdom of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Isaiah 40:31, but those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. So all this leads up to something that started me with this lesson title a few weeks ago, a song by an artist named Mandisa. I've got some background information there for her that you could look at, but she was one of the finalists on American Idol when that show was popular. I know people are switching to The Voice and other shows now, and her age there, just about 6 years younger than I am, if it tells you anything. But the words of the song, I think, were the most important thing to me, being unfinished, because it really hit me, and hopefully as we look through these pictures of wood finishing and refinishing, it'll hit you in a similar fashion. So the words begin, not scared to say it, I used to be the one preaching it to you, that you could overcome, I still believe it, but it ain't easy. How many of us that know Christ and know God have talked to our brothers or our sisters or aunts and uncles, maybe our parents and people in our lives, and said, oh, you'll be fine, it'll be easy, you can do what God wants you to do. But the artist here says, I said all those things, and I still believe it, but it's not easy. She goes on, because that world I painted where things all worked out, it started changing. So this idea, sometimes we get excited about telling people about all the things that God can do, but then we internalize our own problems, our own difficulties, our own challenges. And here she says, it started changing. And I started having doubts, and it got me so down. If I asked you to raise your hand if you've ever felt like that, when you felt like everything's going good as a Christian, and then you hit a wall, and you just have no energy left. That's kind of what the words are saying. But what did she do in the song? Same thing that I want to do myself. Maybe all of you can do as well. She says, I picked myself back up, and I started telling me. And I love how she put that there. I started telling me. I didn't start telling other people what they need to do. I started right here. Roger needed to pay attention to this. No, God's not done making me a masterpiece. He's still working on me. And as we talked about those different pieces that need to happen in order for work to come out as well as it does, I think that makes a point. And the chorus of the song says, he started something good, and I'm going to believe it. He started something good, and he's going to complete it. So I'll celebrate the truth. His work in me ain't through. I'm just unfinished. I'm just unfinished. So I'll celebrate the truth. His work in me ain't through. I'm just unfinished. The biggest thing on there is about all of us being unfinished. Until death comes, we all have opportunity to make changes. We may have gouges in us, we may have scrapes in us, we may have just a rough surface that's never been finished. Other people in our lives may never have even gotten close to that point. And the idea is for all of us to try to get there. So I just wanted to share those things with you today. One of the things I had as kind of a follow-up as we concluded this thing, thinking about the passage that says Jesus Christ is the author and finisher of our faith. He's the one that can make all this happen. He is the master craftsman. Interestingly, how he was born to a father that was into the construction trade. Some think that he was a carpenter. But Jesus truly is the one of all creation and all perfection. And if we can look to him and we can try to focus on him, all these things, all these weaknesses that we feel, the imperfections that we feel will be gone. And we can be as smooth as can be. So just encourage you to think about these things this morning. If we have a need, please let those be known. That's the only way that we can pray for you. And any of those that are not baptized, it's the opportune time now to take care of that. Please do so as we stand and sing.